Good morning. This is Lynn Canal Voice, a new public affairs show from the KHNS Newsroom. I'm News Director Emily Files. Today, we're talking about Haynesboro manager turnover. But before that discussion, let's take a look at recent and upcoming news in the Upper Lynn Canal. Reporter Abby Collins is here with me, and we're going to chat about some of the news this week. Hi, Abby.
Good morning.
So both Haynes and Skagway had waterfront-related meetings this week, which were geared towards gathering as much public input as possible. Tell me about those meetings in Haynes, which you attended.
Right, so the landscape architects from Corvus Design were in town this week, and they're the ones that are heading up the design phase of the Portage Cove Interpretive Trail and Park in Haynes, so the waterfront trail and park project. And so their goal was to meet with the public about that project, and they held two public meetings and 2 days of open studio sessions. Some common concerns were addressed this week about that project. One is where the money is coming from. Is it taking away from the harbor project? And interim manager Brad Ryan said no. It's coming from cruise ship taxes.
Cruise ship passenger taxes, which communities that have cruise ships visiting get from the state.
Right. And then the other concern, big concern has been, is this trail going to run over private property? And what we heard this week is that private property will not be affected unless it's volunteered by the owners, unless they want to participate and volunteer that land. Otherwise, it will avoid that. And so over the course of the week, the designers got input from the public about where the trail should go, what the walkways should be made out of, and what stories should be told about Haynes, which is the interpretive part. Mm-hmm. And that was really stressed in this visit, is what is important to this community, what stories should visitors learn about Haynes when they're walking around this trail. And some common themes there were fishing and hunting, native culture, art, wildlife, recreation, and the beauty of our surroundings.
Okay, and I think that you're going to have a story on that for us within the next couple days in the local newscast.
I will, and it will include some of the things we found out about the draft trail that came together over the course of the last few days between the designers and the public. So
great. And then in Skagway, the assembly hired a port consultant, Moffitt and Nickel, and they held their first meetings on Monday. About 40 people turned out, and I was there talking to residents about what their hopes are for the port. The assembly is hoping the consultant will help the borough get unstuck from the current stalemate with White Pass over access to property to clean up contamination and renovate the port. So we're going to be following the port consultant process over the next few months. Also in Skagway, the town saw its first legal marijuana sales this past weekend. The licensed retail marijuana business Remedy Shop had its soft opening Friday. They received their first 5 pounds of marijuana from a cultivator in Sitka and have had steady business since they opened on Friday. And finally, Abby, you reported on some disappointing news around the Chilkat king salmon forecast. Tell me about that.
Right. So the forecast for adult king salmon returning to the Chilkat River this coming year is 634 large fish. So that's fish that are 5 years or older, and those are like the really mature fish that you want to see returning. And that's the lowest prediction in over 25 years. But that news isn't really new or shocking, really. It's kind of following a 10-year or so downward trend. And last year, the escapement estimate was the lowest since 1991. So now managers, fish and game managers, and biologists are sort of working together to figure out why this is happening, which is a big question mark, and what they can do to help conserve the fish while still maintaining a viable fishery, because it's an important part of life here.
And there's been some public discussion around that at the Upper Lynn Canal Fish and Game Advisory Committee meetings. Is that something that they're going to continue to talk about?
I think so. So Brian Elliott, the Chinook stock assessment biologist with Fish and Game here in Haynes, has been studying this. He gave a really lengthy presentation to the Upper Lynn Canal Advisory Committee about why it might be happening. And they talked about some different reasons for that. He said, you know, we're not going to pin this on one fishery, not on one gear group, but we are taking those things into account. So they're looking at things like marine survival, which is how many smolts or the young fish are making it back as mature adults. And that seems to be a big problem for us up in the Chilkat River. But we're not alone here. This is happening all over Southeast. This is a problem that people are facing around the region, and they're all working towards remedying it if it's possible.
Yeah, just such a dramatically low forecast, less than 1,000.
Right.
It's pretty stark numbers
it's,
there.
It's pretty, yeah, it's pretty dramatic, and doesn't, following trends doesn't, there aren't a lot of indicators that will really far exceed that forecast in the coming year.
All right, that's KHNS reporter Abby Collins checking in with us about the week's news. Thanks, Abby.
Thanks, Emily.
And we'll be covering those stories as they develop. You're listening to Lynn Canal Voice, a public affairs show from the KHNS news team. And we're going to take a quick break while we get our next guest in here. Good morning. You're tuned in to Lynn Canal Voice on KHNS. I'm Emily Files. Today we're talking about Haynesboro manager turnover, which is an ongoing issue for the community. The last two permanent managers were here for short periods of time. The Assembly fired Bill Seward in December after just 6 months, and Dave Sosa, the manager before Seward, resigned after less than 2 years. We're going to start this conversation talking briefly with Brad Ryan. He was public facilities director and is now serving as interim manager. Hi, Brad.
Hello.
So I want to be careful because you've said you're interested in the permanent manager job, and you're not the only candidate so far. Deborah Schnabel has also expressed interest, and there may be more candidates because the Assembly decided to advertise the job statewide. So I want to be fair to the other candidates. We're not going to talk about the permanent position, just about what your experience has been as interim manager now and last year when you served as interim manager for about 6 months. So this is your second go-round as interim manager. Can you describe what the main responsibilities of the manager job are?
Wow, that's a big question. I think this time and last time I was interim, the primary focus is the budget. Previously, there was union negotiations as well. But this time of year, it's pretty focused on the budget. It's focused on interacting with the department heads to make sure they're on budget or they're looking at what they're going to do next fiscal year. The two times I've been in there, the department heads are right on. They've been here. They've been doing their job a long time. And so really it's about working with them to make sure they're successful and providing them with the appropriate support that they need to move forward.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything about the manager position that you think the general public doesn't understand?
Well, there's probably a lot of it. I think the biggest thing is how many people come to see you with requests, and you have to weigh them against everybody else's requests, and you have to be cautious about how you answer that question. And people are coming in, and you know, one person might come in and say, I want paved roads. And 2 minutes later, another person will come and say, I want gravel roads. That's a very simple example, but it kind of happens at a constant rate until people get to know you and you can explain to them, yes, I understand that that's what you would like, but there's you know, the other aspect of the community that doesn't like that. And once you get an understanding, it slows down. But I think maybe that's what people don't understand the most is how many requests you get that are actually contradictory to each other.
So how do you handle all that variety of input?
I usually try to listen to them. If I know an answer, like, you know, this is why we haven't gone there, and this is why, I try to explain to them why. Or I like to just tell them I'll take it in consideration and follow up, and I work really hard to make sure I do follow up. I don't always. There's a lot of emails that come in and requests, but definitely try hard to make sure I always follow up.
And then what about communication with the Assembly, which is something I'll also be talking to a few Assembly members with in a few minutes. But, you know, there's 6 different Assembly members and there are meetings every 2 weeks. But how does the communication work there Does the manager usually have to wait until there's direction from the full assembly to pursue a certain project or way of going about something? Or is it difficult because you're getting input from all of them separately?
I think it's my last experience. It's difficult in the initial stages. You have six assembly members. You don't understand how to interact with them necessarily. And so you have to form that relationship. And it takes a few months to really understand that. One assembly member might have questions on a topic that they don't understand, and the other assembly member might be an expert in it. So you don't necessarily have to interact with every assembly member on every topic. But when you go to act, it needs to be something that's within the borough's authority to act. And if it's not, or I'm sorry, the borough manager's authority to act. And if it's not, you need to go back to the assembly as a whole and ask them for direction as the assembly. Mm-hmm.
So you've jumped back and forth between public facilities director and manager. So you've kind of seen what it's like as a department head to go through this turnover that Haynes has experienced. And then you've also been the borough manager, the interim borough manager, working with all the department heads. So what kind of impact have you seen the turnover have on borough business and borough staff?
That's interesting. Having worked, and I'm going to say I've worked for three borough managers, which isn't true. One of them was myself. However, every borough manager has a direction and a way to interact with staff and a way to interact with the assembly and the community. And that change is, it might be subtle or it might be dramatic depending on which manager steps in for the new role. And it can really be challenging to move forward in your department. If you have a project that's gone forward and your manager's in full support of that, and then the next manager comes along and says, well, maybe I have another direction, which is okay. You know, changing directions is fine. It's just that it happens so quickly here that when you try to deal with your outside funding agencies or permit agencies or businesses, they start to you start to get radio silence on the phone calls. You're like, well, I'm going to change directions again for the third time. And you can just hear the pause when you call your other professional contacts, and you're always explaining yourself. So the transition is tough.
Is there a specific project that's happened with all the turnover that you can point to?
I think the sport ramp at the harbor has been the biggest challenge. Dave Sosa had his direction. I had mine. And then Bill Seward has his, and now we're back again. And at the same time, there was a lot of questions about that project from the community. Mm-hmm. And so that one has been really challenging to handle. We outreach to them a lot and try to keep them informed, but you can still kind of hear the pause from the sport ramp. And I think right now they're feeling really good. The assembly's come around and the community's come around to go forward with this. But in my year and 2 months there, changed three managers, and every time there's a little bit of nuance change there, and the community and the assembly were still trying to figure out what to do with it. So that's been a challenging one.
So that's phase two of the harbor project, the sport fish ramp, and it potentially is going to be funded by Alaska Fish and Game.
It's a federal pass-through. Well, I don't know if I'm supposed to use the word pass-through, but it's a federally funded program that goes through the state of Alaska Fish and Game.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Brad.
All right. Thank you.
Brad Ryan is Haynes Interim Borough Manager, and we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll be talking to a panel of current and former assembly members.
Thank you.
Good morning. You're listening to Lynn Canal Voice on KHNS. I'm Emily Files, and our topic today is Haynesboro manager turnover. I have three guests in the studio with me. Mike Case is a current assembly member and the longest serving member at the moment. Tom Morfitt is a newly elected assembly member, and Doug Olrude is a former assembly and council member and business owner. Thank you all for being here.
It's great to be here.
Everyone got their mics ready? Okay.
We're here.
So I want to start by asking each of you why you think Haynes has had such a problem retaining borough managers. Mike, can we start with you?
Yes, you can start with me. I'm not sure if you'll get a really coherent answer. But, well, there's a couple of reasons. Of course, we had one die on the spot, one who took accepted the job and who would have been very good, but the first week he was here, he was diagnosed with cancer and subsequently died. We've had another one that was hired and really didn't want the job from the start and quit after 90 days. A couple of them lasted longer, and for whatever reason, they lasted about the typical range of years that is excellent for managers in Alaska. It's not a long-term kind of thing. So why does that happen? It's partially because you get different expectations with a rotating, in my opinion, a rotating group of overseers, if you will, the assembly people. My expectations might be different from Tom's, might be different from Doug's, and so on. And I'm probably talking too much, so you'd probably like to hear what somebody else thinks.
Okay. Doug?
I think it's two things. One of them is I don't think Haynes is ever going to get top of the line candidates just for the salary that we're able to offer. So we're looking at either entry-level people or people towards the end of their careers that about ready to retire, want to spend some time in Alaska. So I think a lot of times our expectations on what we're going to get from a manager might be higher than what we're realistically going to be able to get. And I think another thing is the assembly, kind of like what Mike was talking about, but I don't think the assembly always follows their role. Like the assembly is set up in a manager form of government that they're supposed to look at the broad picture. They're supposed to set the goals and the priorities for the community as a whole. And then the manager is supposed to fill in the details and run with that broad plan. And if the assembly thinks that he's going outside of that plan, try and rein him in. But I think too many times assembly members want to get down into the minute details and they want to dictate what the manager does in his job. And that's never going to be successful in the long term in a manager form of government.
Okay. And Tom?
Well, I have to say I have to agree with what both Doug and Mike had to say. My quick answer on that is that this is a very difficult job in a very difficult town. This town spent 6 months in the 1990s arguing over whether we should have the word global in our school mission statement. When I proposed a vote on the harbor project, there was immediately calls on Facebook for my recall. Of course, those have continued. Most recently, on Facebook, I was called a racist. I think about a year ago, the mayor was reduced to saying that the town was hateful. So I think those two factors make the job only very well suited for an exceptional individual. And I think Doug's right. We don't pay exceptional wages for what the job is. And I'm not sure that the public is willing to spend as much money as a very highly qualified manager would need to do the job, quite frankly. But I do want to say a little bit about the skills that are required to do that job well are enormous and very broad. You think at the school, we have one job to educate kids, and we get superintendents that have been there for maybe 20, have been in education for 20 years, that sometimes and have been in administration for a number of years, and sometimes flunk out at being our superintendent. And that's one role. Whereas, you know, the borough does water and sewer planning, taxation, recreation, harbors, parks, fire service, ambulance. So you're overseeing this a huge complex machine, and it takes a lot of skills, people skills, math skills, construction, utilities, to do that. I mean, it's a very difficult job, and so it's no wonder to me that, as Mike said, people, even highly functioning people who do the job well, don't do the job long. Robert Venables, I think, was almost 4 years, and Mark Ernest was almost 4 years, and those are kind of the record holders in recent memory. You know, it helps to have a knowledge of the town and a knowledge of what the job is coming into it, for sure.
So you've mentioned the salary a couple times. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the assembly should look into increasing the manager's salary and see if that is one of the solutions to try to help with the turnover problem, Mike?
Well, it's always a good idea to check how your salaries compare to similar sized communities in the area, just so that a really good holder of any office, whether it's manager or police chief or whatever, you don't want them lured away because there's a higher salary out there. If they're really doing a good job, you want to be sure they stay and continue to do a good job. I don't think the community would be very upset if we would raise the salary significantly. There are certain people that would, and there always is. You know, those folks don't do anything down there. You know, they just don't understand what's being done, nor should they, because it runs so smoothly that they don't have occasion to see all of the intricate details that are being worked all the time, every day. I think we've had some pretty good managers in many respects. Mark Ernest certainly had the skills. He got kind of tired after a while and didn't do as well as I know he was capable of. Robert Venables, in my opinion, did a great job. There are some others that weren't quite as good. But as far as salary goes, I don't think that is really the prime answer now. I think we want to get somebody that really wants to be in Southeast Alaska. Not just a job, but somebody that wants a job in Southeast Alaska.
Hmm. The salary question, it's something that's come up here, but I haven't heard the assembly talking about that aspect of the manager job, at least in the recent turnover that's happened. Tom, do you think that it's something that's going to be a priority, or does it not seem that way?
Well, we have a $500,000 deficit right now, and who knows what's going to happen at the end of this legislative session. So it would be a tough sell, I think, with the voters. And Haynes is historically paid fairly low. And I think it would be justified, and when we go to advertise, in terms of attracting a broader and more qualified pool of candidates, for sure. And I think part of the way it is justified, or one of the reasons it is justified, is that this is a politicized town. It's always been a politicized town. I don't know why that is, but it's a fact of our town. I think part of it is the fact that we have a higher percentage, about 10% higher percentage of people from outside who live here, even higher than Alaska. And Alaska has an astronomical rate of residents who were born somewhere else. And I think people who are pioneers tend to be very headstrong. And people who move to another place, they feel very sure of themselves. We're kind of a town of know-it-alls. And so it becomes a rough and tumble kind of town. And we've had, you know, in this last round of hiring, there was a candidate that said he was conflict averse. And I thought, bam, that takes you right off the list. You got to be ready for, you know, a little bit of bruising. And, you know, ideally, I think a manager is politically neutral, and that's how they survive. But it's easy to get drawn in or portrayed or construed as to be involved in politics because you operate within a political realm. And I think even the best guys are going to be accused of that, of taking sides or playing one side against the other. And that's when you start to lose favor with the people that you work for, who are the assembly. So I think Haynes is a special case, and I think it would justify probably paying the manager more. Whether we could get that past voters or not is a good question, and I wouldn't do it. I would only do it during the advertising for the job, in terms of making a big boost, in terms of trying to attract, you know, highly qualified candidates.
And it does bring up the question of, if the borough manager salary were to be raised, what about the other borough employee salaries? Because it's not just the manager job that is paid less in Haynes than in comparable towns in Southeast.
Sure. I mean, you know, I don't subscribe to that all boats must be lifted at the same time. I think different jobs require a range of different qualifications, and there's a huge gap between some occupations, you know, in terms of expectations, in terms of workload, in terms of expertise, in terms of hours spent. So I guess I don't have so much problem maybe with having a gap there.
And just one more thing on that note, there was an employee survey that was initiated by former manager Seward, kind of gauging how borough employees feel about a variety of job-related issues. And the scores on salary and benefits questions were some of the lowest in that survey. So, mm-hmm. Doug, when you were on the Assembly and Council, was Haynes experiencing the same problem, or is it a more recent issue?
I think the underlying problem was still there. When we were interviewing people, a lot of them would take their names off when they heard the salary range. So that was something. It seems like it's speeding up as far as the lack of time that people are spending on the job, and watching it from a distance over the last 8 or 9 years since I got off the assembly, it seems like the meetings and the public's reaction with the assembly has become more and more contentious, and I don't think that's going to help us attract somebody from out of town that's highly qualified. And you know, you're always going to have the salary problem. Haynes is an amazing place to live. We've all chosen to live here. It's a lot of benefits. But I think a lot of times we want to have small town Haynes, but we want all the benefits of living in the city the size of Juneau or Anchorage. And we want. And so we spread ourselves so thin that we don't have the money to get the best qualified people or to enumerate the employees that are doing an outstanding job for us, is because we are so spread so thin as a borough that we don't have that money. We've got a $500 million or $500,000 deficit this last year. But maybe if we contracted what the borough was doing overall, we would have money to give pay raises not only to the manager, but to other support staff and everything down the road, and have better services for the core missions of the borough. But I would like to think, my idea on the manager and, you know, the contentious meetings and stuff, I think our elected officials have to step up to the plate and show the leadership in how they're reacting to the audience, how they're responding to the audience, and demand that the people that are there act in a certain manner, or it's just going to keep going down that slope and you're going to have more yelling and screaming than we do now, more name calling of assembly members like Tom was referring to. Somebody needs to step up and say, enough's enough. If you're going to be making a comment, it needs to be, we can disagree, but it needs to be done in a respectful manner. And what professional would want to come into that kind of a toxic environment that no matter what you do, you're going to have a segment of people that are going to be calling you names and yelling and screaming at you. That needs to come to some conclusion or some mending of the ways and how we discuss our differences before we're going to be able to get past some of this turnover with managers.
Hmm. Mike, do you have anything to add to that?
No. Excuse me. I think Doug put it pretty well. We do have on occasion some outbursts from the the assembly, and usually that's stirred up by people who are pretty ardent about their feelings. And probably the minor offense thing was the most recent example of that. People completely misunderstood what that was about. They thought we were adding new offenses, and we weren't. The offenses have been there for years and years. Tom and I were joking the other day about the so-called jaywalking law. There's only been one person that has ever been cited for jaywalking in the last 20 years, and it was Tom. And he told me this. I mean, I'm not squealing on him. And it was kind of comical in a way, and he understood it. But it's not anything where we're going to get rich. Maybe we should eliminate that from our borough code. But if we do, it's still in the state code, and we're not going to get rid of it there. There's a pretty good reason that some of those things are there, like walking on the proper side of the highway. Because if you don't have those rules, then people can walk on either side all the time. It's particularly on narrow roads, for instance, if we take that walking on the right side of the highway, on narrow roads, you get people walking on the wrong side. It's just a recipe for disaster.
So you're using the minor offenses, the contentiousness that surrounded that, as an example of some of the responses, maybe overblown responses to things that the borough is working on from the community?
Yeah, because people didn't understand what it was. And once we got a few open houses going, and then had an ad hoc committee with people attending, everything went very, very smoothly. I guess very smoothly is correct. And that is progressing at a good rate.
Tom?
Well, I think that example of the minor offense ordinance is a good one, because if the public understood or not, the public was opposed. And we had a manager at that time who kept pushing for that ordinance. And I think it was, and we had it, the paper, we knew something was up because we had people who had never spoken to us said, hey, this minor offense thing is a mess. I'm against it. So I think because we had a rookie manager who didn't know Haynes and hadn't served as a manager before, he kept pushing this thing on the agenda. And I think a more experienced manager in that situation would have said, okay, I'm going to back off. Let's take this thing off the meeting schedule and explain it to the public. Instead, it took 600 people signing up and signing a petition, these very acrimonious meetings for the assembly to finally slow down on that. And I think that's what you get when, let me put it this way. I think if a person who was if the manager at the time knew the town more and knew that people were coming out of the woodwork on this thing, he would have known, whoa, 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 this has gotten nuclear hot. We need to cool this thing off. I'm going to pull it off the agenda. We're going to have a series of meetings. But the manager we had at the time, I think because it was new to town, didn't understand how hot that issue would become. And Mike, you know, I'm not doubting what Mike has said, that people misunderstood it. Misunderstood or not, you know, that's not the government's. The government can't say, oh, we're going to do what we want anyway because you don't understand it. You have to bring people along on a decision. And if they don't understand it and are still opposed, it's still opposition and it's still a mess for the government.
Does the assembly...
Can I break in on that for
sure.
A second? But at the same time, Tom, the assembly bears some of the responsibility for that also, because they do know the town. They are getting
Sure.
And that's the place where I was talking about earlier with the leadership.
Sure.
That's when the assembly and the mayor
should have stepped
need
in.
To say,
yeah.
you Good know, point. This here, yeah. we need to slow this down. Let's do more, a better job educating the
you
people
bet.
On how this is going to happen
you
before
bet.
We go even any further.
Good point.
And I'd mentioned that to several assembly members, and the same thing with the Boat Harbor project. They kept pushing, and you had a lot of people that were pushing back. And I told a couple assembly members, I said, you're not doing a good enough job describing what you're going to do to the public. If you've got this many people against it, mm-hmm. regardless of how good you feel about it, you're not describing it in good enough terms so they understand the benefits to them.
Mm-hmm.
And until you do that, you need to back off and figure out a better way to describe this to people to get them on board, or you're going to keep having the same problem.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, it does seem like with the two most recent permanent managers, maybe there was some misunderstanding in how to conduct that job in a town like Haines, which does have a lot of contentiousness and there's a lot of public scrutiny, and things can become heated fast. So does the assembly have a responsibility to work with the manager more, possibly do training or more, you know, more conversations to prepare a manager if we hire one from who is not from Haines for that, those kind of situations? Go ahead, Tom.
I think a lot of it comes down to the title that we give to the manager, that it's a manager. I think there's a misnomer that the manager manages the community because it's the job is manager. The difference, the manager's main job is to manage the staff. And that's the difference between a manager and an administrator in a form, in a strong mayor form of government, which is different than what we have. The administrator does everything the manager does, except for he doesn't hire and fire and manage the staff. The mayor does that. But I do think that what has happened, what to me were alarming in the last two managers, is they had their own, they developed their own agendas. Mr. Sosa took on Mosquito Lake School, wanted to close it. In fact, he announced that he was going to sell it. And now, to my knowledge, he was never directed by the assembly to sell the Mosquito Lake School. You know, the job description is pretty clear, and I brought a copy. The manager implements policy as set by the borough assembly. That's the first sentence of the job description. So where Mr. Sosa got that idea that Mosquito Lake School needed to be sold and why he was spending his time on it is a mystery to me. And we saw that, I believe, with Mr. Sosa, excuse me, Mr. Seward, as well, on several questions, where I, as an assembly member, asked, where is this coming from? We didn't give direction for you to go down this path. And I think it was very illuminating. We had a discussion with Mr. Dave Palmer, who had been a manager in Southeast for 20 years and had applied here for the interim job recently. And he said, there was a question of what his responsibilities were, and he says, I take my cues and directions from you folks. This is a direct quote. I'm there to help you get what you need done, and I listen to the assembly, and I find out what's important. I talk to the staff and work back and forth between the two, the staff and the assembly, to come up with a plan that people hopefully will buy into. So, you know, I think the first thing is understanding that the manager, that the way that it's supposed to work. And I also spoke before this program with Vince Hansen, who was a manager for 1 year, and he was also administrator for 2 years. And he said the way that he did that job, and there's close parallels between administrator and manager, is that he took his job, he took his direction from the city council at the time, or the assembly. I mean, from the city council and from the assembly. And then he went to his mayor, who was Don Otis, and Don would say, you handle the technical side of it, and I'll handle the political side of it. So the manager outlines what he thinks needs to be done, and the mayor, who is in our form of government, a paid employee, who has an office adjacent to the manager's office, the mayor says, okay, well, I can see these political roadblocks to getting this done. I'll handle that part. You just give me the facts. And I think a manager who... There's two ways to do the manager job, I believe. You can do all the research on a question and then come up with your recommendation and present that to the assembly and be able to explain that. But the kind of a shorthand version that doesn't work is when a manager looks at an issue and says, which way is the political wind blowing? And I'll just kind of give my information for that. And once I think the manager steps into that realm of politics, he's in quicksand. But the difference is, to do that job well and objectively takes hours. It takes huge analysis. It takes talking with a lot of people. It's a very consuming job. Vince Hansen said, it's an impossible job, but you find a way to do it, was his direct quote. And so I think that knowing the parameters and knowing what people's roles are is essential. And I agree, you can't have the assembly micromanaging the manager, saying you're doing that wrong. There has to be a certain amount of faith and trust in your employee, or else the whole thing bogs up. But at the same time, you can't have a manager that says, well, I think this should be done, and damn the assembly, I'm going to get it done. You know, there's parameters for both sides, and I think keeping those in mind all the time is really important.
Mm-hmm. Do either of you want to add to that?
Well, I agree with Tom somewhat, but at the same time, you know, it says it'll manage what's put forth by the assembly. So if manager can look at something, and if they feel that it's part of the it furthers the comprehensive plan or one of the other planning documents, I don't have a problem with them showing some initiative and going out and trying something, because it depends on how big of a project it is that they're taking on. You know, Mr. Sosa got his hand slapped on the Mosquito Lake School, but there could be an argument that under the comprehensive plan and stuff, as far as, or managing the budget, which is what he's supposed to do, that that fits into that and make a come and make a recommendation to the assembly. And then if it goes off the rails from there, again, I think you get back to the proper leadership coming from the assembly and the mayor, that there needs to be proper guidance. And when you talked about with a new manager coming in from out of town, I would recommend the first thing that they do is have somebody from AML come down and have the assembly, some staff, the new manager, and go over how a manager form of government works. So the new manager, the assembly, the mayor are all on the same page about what our roles are. Mm-hmm. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts with the manager coming in with one idea and everybody else having another. And then also have a strategic planning meeting where you can go over the comprehensive plan. And this is kind of like you had mentioned, Emily, bringing everybody up to date. These are the issues that we're having with the community. Spend a 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday or a whatever day you want. Bring somebody from out of town to kind of moderate that. And so everybody comes through at the beginning with what are our critical goals right now? What are the main things we need to do? What everybody's role is. So everybody's starting off on the same page rather than manager coming in, kind of getting some stuff from KHNS, some stuff from CVN, some stuff from Mike, some stuff from the mayor, some stuff from Tom. And you get it from so many different places, nobody knows which way is up. Mm-hmm. So have everybody get that information, try and get everybody on the same page. Might not agree with everybody, but this is what how we view this going forward. And start from there. I think it'd give you a better platform than what we've done the last couple ones.
You know, there is a position in the Department of Economic Development and Community something or other, but it's called the Local Government Specialist. And this is a job that last I knew was held by a person who had worked in it for some time and saw how other local governments worked, helped them when they needed help, but learned from them when he could, and tried to disseminate the good things out to other people so that they could learn what works well and maybe what doesn't work so well. And I think we could get that specialist, whoever he or she might be now, up here and help out. You know, the description in Alaska statute says that the manager form of government, the manager is the chief administrative officer. Somewhere in there, it talks about a chief executive officer, but it seems out of context when it measures that. Most of us think about chief executive officer of some company like Chrysler or AT&T or something like that as the absolute top person. The chief administrative officer is important, but not up at that level. I think that's another thing that we need to define pretty well.
So do you think for the next permanent manager, whoever that person is, the assembly should try to put more emphasis or set up a training that hasn't happened with the past two managers, where the role of the manager and the role of the assembly and the relationship between those two is more clearly defined right from the start?
I do.
Tom?
Oh, and I just wanted to say one thing in response to Doug. I guess my issue with on the question of managers going off on their own projects is, and this we used to do this at the city council level with the administrator. The administrator would say, I would like to do these things, and Doug, you might remember this back in the 90s. The manager would give his report and say, I've done these things in the past 2 weeks. I'm going to be working on these in the next two. And just to give us a heads up, because I think with that Mosquito Lake School, it was just would have taken a couple of phone calls to realize, wait, we're not there yet. Don't spend a lot of our money and time pushing that issue. And that's where I think the need for better communication between the assembly and manager is critical. I don't have a problem with a manager taking initiative, but I do have a problem with taking initiative outside of assembly direction or directives or even notification. This manager is still an employee who answers directly to the assembly, and we can't have our employees going off doing things we don't want them to do.
Mike?
Yeah, and Tom brings up a good point that the manager answers to the assembly. And at one time it was pretty clear that it was to the assembly through the mayor. And I thought that worked pretty well because I was the mayor. But I saw it work well with others too. So that they weren't getting, a manager was not getting six sides of the elephant. One person thinks that, we got to work on this is our top priority, and somebody else thinks something else. And I think to the extent possible, we're not a strong mayor form of government, but to the extent possible, we ought to try to have communications go through the mayor. If we don't like the way the mayor's transmitting that to the manager, we can correct that.
Tom, do you think?
Well, I guess I differ on that with Mike, because the manager works for the six assembly people. The mayor doesn't get a vote on whether we keep or let a manager go. The mayor has veto power because of that kind of, it's a balance of power. And I think that the idea that we would go through the mayor to talk to the manager isn't in the model that the government specialist, that the local government specialist would tell us is the model. I don't think that model is the way it's the system.
Yeah, and I think I misspoke. I didn't mean that the individual assembly members could not go in and talk to the manager and give their view of how something is coming about. But if it gets to the point where he's getting four or five or six different ideas of what this should look like, then it should go to the mayor to resolve that.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be the ultimate authority, but to seek resolution by getting the appropriate people together.
Doug, real quickly, because I have one more question I want to get to.
Okay. My comment between that is the only direction that the manager should be taking is that's been voted on and approved by at least four assembly members. Mm-hmm. If a single assembly member wants to give them direction, they should ignore that at all at all times. The only thing they should be working on is if you've got four people that voted for it, that's the direction you take. Ignore the rest.
Okay. One thing that's come up recently is that the assembly has been hiring managers based on other attributes aside from professional qualifications. If the assembly were to put more weight on professional experience, what kind of difference do you think that would make? Mike?
Well, I'm not sure that we have put it on other than professional qualifications, but of course that you have to define what those are. Let's take Manager Sosa, for example. We know that here's a person that grew up in a system, even though it was pretty authoritarian, where he got increasing levels of responsibility in increasing areas in diverse areas of responsibility.
You're referring to the Marines?
Yes, the Marines. And he, he at one time he was head of all recruiting in California and the Western states, and other time he was the CO of a of a infantry battalion, and then he was a person that worked with the Royal Marines for 2 years on an exchange basis. So he learned a lot of professional management skills, hopefully, doing that. The problem is that that they were not those were skills. They weren't ultimate authorities. So it seems to me that when we say professional qualifications, first of all, we have to define what is professional. It's somebody that's getting paid for something and hopefully has been trained or has experience or educated or all some combination of those three in a particular scheme of things. And then qualifications have to be described too. Are we talking about licenses, admittance to a bar, for instance, in some cases? Advanced degrees. Go ahead.
Let me rephrase and make it more specific. Do you think basing the hiring decisions more on municipal experience would make a difference?
Yes.
So do you think the assembly should put more weight on that in the next decision on a permanent manager?
Yes, I do. I haven't talked with anybody else. My personal opinion is that.
Okay. Tom?
Yeah, I think professional qualifications in the vernacular is experience in the job and education in the job. When somebody comes in, say, to be a reporter, you say, do you have a journalism degree? Have you ever worked as a reporter before? Those are your professional qualifications. And I think that that wording is in our charter because the ideal is to have a professional government, a government led by people who have studied what they're doing and have done what they're doing. I mean, I've drawn this parallel before and people are probably sick of it, but you take your car to a mechanic, you want a guy who maybe has gone to mechanic school and been a mechanic for 20 years. You're reasonably assured that your car is going to get fixed. You need to have heart surgery. You want the guy who went to medical school and has been carving into hearts for 20 years. That's the person who's going to do the best job for you. So, I think I think this might get back to the pay question. And I think it does get back to our high expectations. I think Doug hit it on the head, and it might tie into the fact that we have people here who are from other places, and we have this very high level of expectation in that position, and I think and it's reflected in that statement in the charter that we want a professional in there, and so. I mean, I think we need to adhere to that as closely as possible, if that's what we want. I mean, we could take that wording out if that wasn't meaningful to us, but I think that because that was important to people is why that language is in the charter.
Doug?
That's a tough one, because I think you can pick up those same skills in a lot of different ways rather than just municipal government, but there is a skill set of running government compared to running a private enterprise or nonprofits. There is a different skill set involved there. The thing that I worry about putting too much emphasis on that is I've got a friend that's assistant city manager for a fairly large community in California, and talking to them about it, their comment was, for the price that you're paying, you're either going to get somebody that's just starting out or somebody that's ready to retire. Be careful of somebody that's got 10, 15 years experience, because if they're looking to take that job, it's probably because they're not doing very well at the job they're at now, and they're probably about to get fired. And so that's not going to be everybody. There's going to be some people that, like us, that think Haines is the best place to live, and they're willing to take less to live here than they can get somewhere else. But I think it's a tough one. Every time I've been on a hiring committee when I was on the assembly, trying to judge people based on an hour-long interview and questions that they submitted on a piece of paper, it's awful tough, because a lot of times with fear of lawsuits and stuff, you're not going to get an honest answer from the place that they're working at now, if you call up their supervisor, if the person's wanting to get rid of them, they're going, hey, they're a great employee. You're going to be well off to hire them. And as soon as you hire them, that person's going to be going, yes, we got rid of them. So these guys are in a tough position hiring somebody, because until they're there, you really don't know. I mean, it's kind of a flip of the coin.
We're almost out of time. So each of you, you take about 30 seconds, final thoughts.
I wish you were looking at Tom. But I think that we can work together, we being the assembly, and with input from experienced citizens like Douglas, who's been on the assembly twice, I believe, haven't you? And has had a chance to see how different people work. I'm really enthused about the two people I know are going to apply for the job that is open, and somebody else might pop out of the woodwork that we don't even know about. So, thank you.
Doug?
In the meantime, before we hire a new manager, I would like to see our 7 elected officials, our assembly members, and our mayor work on providing more leadership for the community and showing more respect, kind of leading the way, demanding more respect from people in the community when they're speaking up on items. And, you know, just about any relationship, whether it's personal, business, government, you got to have honesty, you got to have trust, you got to have respect, and to start building that foundation now. So whenever we get the new manager, whether it's one of the local candidates or somebody else, they've got a strong base to work off of.
Tom?
I think that unlike maybe what Doug said, I appeal to the public to have patience, which is not always in a great supply this time of year. We tend to be short with each other in January. Something that Dave Palmer said about the manager job, and I think it applies to just relations in local government broadly, he said trust is not something that happens quickly, and it can fall, does not happen easily, and it can fall apart quickly if you're not careful. And so many of our issues are trust issues. And with the manager, you know, that's what we really, the assembly, I guess, really needs to build, and we need to build that amongst ourselves as well.
Assemblyman Tom Morfitt and Mike Case and former Assemblyman Doug Olrud, thank you all for taking the time to be here and having this conversation.
Thank you.
That's it for Lynn Canal Voice. I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining me this hour. If you have suggestions for topics or guests to have on the show, let me know. You can reach me at news@khns.org.